Welcome to Straight Thinking, a GPS for the Christian mind, teaching people how to think, not just what to think. This is Average Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples. Dave Rogstad is off today. On today's podcast, what about all the deaths in the name of God? That's a significant objection posed by skeptics of the Christian faith. And Ken, you're going to help us work through this challenge to see if Christianity can address it.
That's right, Joe. You know, one of the issues that we're kind of dealing with, time to time, is this question of evil, pain, and suffering. And one of the angles in which this comes to us is, what about the charge that is made? And it's made frequently, particularly by the outspoken atheists, that Christianity has not been all that good. What about evil people being killed in the name of God? So I thought it would be good to kind of address some of these issues. I'm working on a book that kind of looks at Christianity from three aspects. Is Christianity rational? Is it good? Is it livable? So I think that these questions come up frequently, and this will give us an opportunity to respond to this. What about all the evil that's been done in the name of Christ?
Yes, very good. Well, I'm sure this will be helpful for listeners because they're going to encounter this if they already haven't. This is one of those common things, and it's a real struggle when it comes at you from a person who has data. I put that in quotes.
Yes, right. Right. Well, I think that maybe a good place to begin is, again, kind of unpackaging this idea that people object to Christianity from various points of view. Some people would argue that Christianity is not rational. Others, however, have made the charge, and I think it probably does reflect more the new atheism, kind of a rhetorical, you know, response that Christianity hasn't been good. It hasn't been good maybe for women, or maybe it hasn't been good for racial minorities, or maybe it just hasn't been good for civilization in that people have been killed in the name of God. And I think probably the place to begin is to say, yes, there has been things done in history by people who sometimes claim the name of Christ that was wrong, that was evil. But I think maybe the response to that is that a big difference when it comes to Christianity is that Christianity has an ethical objective system. So when people do things that are wrong in the name of Christ, that historic Christian morality tends to hold them accountable. One point I'll return to later is, what about evil that's done in the name of no God? What ethical foundation kind of holds that accountable in that way? Well, I thought, Joe, that what we can do together, this is a big topic. I write about it in this book manuscript that I'm working on. I want to kind of lay out some of the claims that are made against Christianity by, you know, some of the leading atheists. In fact, I'll read a quote here by Richard Dawkins from his book, The God Delusion. He says, individual atheists do evil things, but they don't do evil things in the name of atheism. He continues, religious wars really are fought in the name of religion, and they have been horribly frequent in history. And I could add a couple quotes to this. Here's Robert Kuttner in an article entitled "What Would Jefferson Do?" From the American Prospect, November 2004. He says, the Crusades slaughtered millions in the name of Jesus. The Inquisition brought the torture and murder of millions more. After Martin Luther, Christianity did bloody battle with other Christians for another three centuries. Wow. That's quite a claim. Mm. Sam Harris, who is one of the four horsemen of the new atheism, he said, quote, in his book, The End of Faith, although many things can be said in criticism of religious faith, there is no discounting its power. Millions among us, even now, are quite willing to die for our unjustified beliefs, and millions more, it seems, are willing to kill for them. Maybe one more quote here. Two quotes. Steven Pinker, in his book, The Mind Works, he says, religions have given us stonings, witch burnings, crusades, inquisitions, jihads, fatwas, suicide bombers, and abortion clinic gunmen. And then maybe the most rhetorical of all of the new atheists was, of course, the late Christopher Hitchens. In his book, God is Not Great, How Religion Poisons Everything, he says this, violent, irrational, intolerant, allied to racism and tribalism and bigotry, invested in ignorance and hostile to free inquiry, contemptuous of women and coercive toward children, organized religion ought to have a great deal on its conscience.
It's quite a quote.
So I think it's pretty clear that there are many secular people who think that religion spoils everything, and some think that Christianity in particular is at the top of the list in terms of committing violence. Now, I think what I would want to say is a couple things, and I think maybe the place to respond to this is, again, there has been things done in the name of God that are wrong, and I think that it's always possible that people who name the name of Christ can and will do things. But again, I would say that I think Christianity has a value system that is able to respond to that effectively. But I also want to say this. I think that there has been significant, with a capital S, exaggeration of Christian-oriented evil. And I just want to illustrate a little bit of that by talking about four particular areas. I want to speak first of all to the Crusades, which is a pretty popular topic among people who are critical of the history of Christianity. I also want to say something about the Inquisition, another very controversial historical event. I'll say something further about the Salem witch trials, and then I want to talk a little bit about the 30 Years' War, which is a very controversial topic with regard to religion and Christianity in particular. Well, what I want to say here is, as I have been reading and thinking through these topics, I have discovered that there is a very common and popular treatment of these issues, and it's typically that Christianity, you know, Christian history is a mess. It's filled with blood. There are thousands, maybe millions of people who have been killed in the name of God. But there has been a revision of a lot of this. There have been historians who have been writing about these particular areas and pointing out how much of the so-called blame of historic Christianity is a deep exaggeration. So let me illustrate that. Let me talk just a little bit about the Crusades. The Crusades, of course, were in the Middle Ages. They start at 1095 and run to right about 1291. So we move from the 11th to the 13th century. This is a couple hundred years. And of course, these were military confrontations between the forces of Europe. Many of the people, no doubt, would have been have embraced historic Christianity, and they clashed with Islamic forces. And a lot of times, the popular presentation is given along these lines. They insist that Christendom's cruel crusaders attacked peaceful Muslims, and their motive, they wanted land, they wanted loot, they wanted convert. They often say that the death numbers range on the level of the maybe a million or several million people they claim died. And they, of course, argue that this unprovoked attack by Christian forces and they usually describe the Muslims as being innocent, as being victims. They often argue that this is kind of the underlying issue that explains the hostility that exists in our day between Islam and the West. And so they make the case that Christianity and the Western world is paying a price for all those centuries ago engaging in a war that was deeply immoral, mm-hmm. if you will. Mm. Now, this position, which is quite popular, however, has undergone a revision by some very fine historians. What they reveal is that, yeah, there was brutality and bloodshed in the Crusades. There were Western forces that no doubt engaged in an unacceptable form of violence. But that doesn't tell the whole story. In reality, the Crusades were not motivated by wanting to gain land and loot and converts. Rather, Islam and Islamic forces had attacked Europe over numerous centuries. And so the Crusades were viewed as a defensive war. Mm. And in fact, it was motivated to liberate particular cities, Jerusalem being one of them, but cities that had been taken over by Islamic forces. So one could argue that this is a form of just war theory, that without this, it's possible that all of Europe would have been overrun by Muslim forces. I might also add to this in fact, here is a quotation from Dinesh D'Souza, who is not only a political commentator, but is also a Christian and apologist. D'Souza says, quote, "Yet the Crusades were important because they represented a fight for the survival of Europe. Without the Crusades, Western civilization might have been completely overrun by the forces of Islam." So the idea here is, again, the numbers aren't anywhere what they possibly think. And I don't know that the Crusades, if the goal of the Crusades was to get land and loot and converts, it was not a success. If the goal was to defend Western civilization from Islamic invasion, then I think it was successful. But the numbers, I'm going to give some numbers later, but even when you think about population numbers, it's nowhere near millions of deaths. Mm-hmm. And so in certain respects, people have blamed Christianity for the Crusades. And there are also people, by the way, Joe, who would say that the hostility that exists among some Muslim radicals today, the terrorism types of issue, that it really is not about the Crusades. That's not something that Muslims bring up. And so, again, we've kind of been told that the Crusades is this black eye for Christendom. But many historians argue that that's not, at minimum, that's not the full case.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what I've found helpful just in what you've talked about so far is that Christianity does not sidestep or deny what has happened, but there is a better explanation because of historical digging into the issue.
Yeah,
and I think that's helpful for those of us who care about these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that these issues need to be looked at very carefully, and obviously people can have a very strong bias, but there are some really good sources kind of examining these very controversial areas. Well, let's also look at the Spanish Inquisition. The Spanish Inquisition, the dates are 1478 to 1834. So we are running from the late 15th century all the way into the beginning of the 19th century.
Wow, that's a long time. I had no idea.
That's a very long period. And of course, when we hear about the Spanish Inquisition, it's considered a terrifying era, a bloody era. It's often said that the Catholic Church, that they were sadistic monsters and sought to rid Spain of heretics and tortured and murdered not only Jews and Muslims, but also Protestants. And many people think and propose that the Inquisition is one of the worst eras in Christian history. Well, the more I looked into it, the more I discovered that that's at minimum not the whole story. In fact, it may be a complete exaggeration of what took place. And I simply want to offer maybe a more circumspect point of view. It's interesting to me that the numbers here are not nearly what people think. The Inquisition did involve the execution of some people who were tried for heresy, but the emphasis largely in the Inquisition was more about repentance than punishment. I might even add, and here's Rodney Stark, a historian, a professor at Baylor. He gives this amazing quotation. He says, astonishing as it may seem, the new historians of the Inquisition have revealed that in contrast with the secular courts all across Europe, the Spanish Inquisition was a consistent force for justice, restraint, due process, and enlightenment. This was a period in time in which Joe people took doctrinal heresy very seriously. As we come out of the Middle Ages, I think it's important to kind of appreciate the views that Christendom held at the time. During the Middle Ages, the view was that they lived in a Christian civilization, and that people who proposed heresy, they were not just doctrinally deviant, but they were undermining Christian civilization. They were threatening the souls of people. And so in the medieval period, you could be executed publicly for those types of beliefs. Now, again, whether you agree with that or disagree with that, and I think I disagree largely with that.
With what now?
I disagree with the idea that heretics should be executed.
Okay.
But even if you disagree with that, I think you can begin to understand the way people thought at the time.
Yeah.
And the way they thought was it was like treason.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say that. I heard a podcast from a Christian historian who I think has probably the same view as you regarding some of these matters. He was talking about a different problem, but he said heresy was considered a public health problem. He put it in kind of contemporary language. And that helps us to see it a little bit better. In other words, if you have that kind of problem, you got to get rid of it, right?
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Well, again, the Inquisition did not involve the large numbers. In fact, over a 300 or 400 year period, I think about 2,000 people were executed.
Mm. So this is over how many centuries again?
We're moving from the 15th to the 19th century.
So several centuries, 2,000 deaths.
Yeah. Yes. Now, that's not anything like thousands and millions of deaths. Mm-hmm. Let me also mention again, rather briefly, the Salem witch trials, because this is often mentioned. And again, you can raise the question, should have Christians put witches on trial? The dates are 1692 to 1693. This is in colonial Massachusetts. You can raise questions about whether this was misguided. You can raise questions about the morality of this kind of issue. But again, people say many thousands of witches were executed. In reality, 19 women were actually executed for the charge of witchcraft. Now, there were other people, there were other women who were incarcerated and I think ended up dying in prison. But again, whether you think the trials are misguided, even if you think they're morally deplorable, the number of people killed isn't anything close to what critics of Christianity have to say.
You know, there was a TV program on public television a while back. I forgot what it was called, but I think it was A History of Us, something like that. And they spent a lot of time talking about the Salem witch trials. And I was just wondering, you know, whether they gave equal weight to some other parts of American history, but that seemed to be a dominant feature.
Yeah, well, it's a very popular idea, and obviously people think, wow, you know, here the early Christians in colonial America, you know, are going looking for people who have differing beliefs, maybe superstitious beliefs, but they're using force and violence to kind of crush them. Again, my response is whether you think that was misguided. Thousands and millions of witches were never put to death. That's a false statement. Now, the next one has to do, Joe, with the Catholic-Protestant wars. I'm going to particularly look at the 30 Years' War. The 30 Years' War runs from 1618 to 1648. It's often depicted as a war between the branches of Christendom. So remember that, you know, Luther nails the 95 Theses in 1517. So a century, virtually 100 years before the 30 Years' War, you have the Protestant Reformation. There is a clash between Catholic forces and Protestant forces at times. Europe is divided over this question of the Reformation, but many people say this is directly a Catholic-Protestant war, and it's fought in the name of Christ. However, what we discover is very much a revised point of view, and that is that initially there was some religious tension involved, but that in a more developed perspective of the 30 Years' War, we see that it was in measure a political controversy. It was presented in religious terms, but really it was a political issue. I would go so far as to say, Joe, that this happens frequently, even when you think of the challenges of Northern Ireland, where you often hear it's a battle between Catholics and Protestants. But could I say this, and I think it's very clear that this is the case, that the troubles that we have in Northern Ireland, and oftentimes even in other parts of the world like the Middle East, in Northern Ireland, you don't have Catholics and Protestants shooting at each other where the Protestant shoots at the Catholic and says, sola scriptura, and the Catholic shoots back and responds, viva the Pope. The controversy in Northern Ireland is a political issue. It happens to be framed in kind of a religious type of context. Now, again, none of this is intended to say that there haven't been dark sides in Christian history, and none of it is to say that Christian people are perfect, but I often think that the wars that are added to the side of the misery that Christianity has brought are greatly exaggerated, and oftentimes the motives are ethnic cleansing, politics, economics. But again, Europe tends to frame things in terms of religious categories, and particularly Catholic-Protestant categories. Mm. So here's a quotation from one of my friends, Greg Kokel. I think he makes a very good point here. He says many conflicts that appear at first glance to be religious in nature are actually political or cultural wars that divide among religious lines. The strife in Northern Ireland is not a theological dispute about Catholicism or Protestantism per se, but rather a cultural power struggle between two groups of people. In like manner, much of the conflict in Eastern Europe and the Middle East is the result of ethnic hostilities, not genuine religious differences. Now, you know, you can only imagine that a 30 years war is a catastrophe. And to some extent, I think leaders of Christendom have to bear some responsibility in that they have the kind of influence that they have. But I think with all of these, Joe, I think that we can fairly say that while Christianity and Christendom carries culpability with some of the dark sides of history, that there has been a significant exaggeration of the numbers of death, and it's been painted in the worst light possible. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the the big responses. And I want to offer a quotation here. Again, this is from Dinesh D'Souza. He has a book entitled What's So Great About Christianity? One of the chapters addresses deaths in the name of God. Here's what D'Souza says. He says, taken together, the Crusades, the Inquisition, and the witch burnings killed approximately 200,000 people. Adjusting for the increase in population, that's the equivalent of 1 million deaths today. Even so, these deaths caused by Christian rulers over a 500-year period amount to only 1% of the deaths caused by Stalin, Hitler, and Mao in the space of a few decades.
Wow.
So I think it's clear that the Crusades, the Spanish Inquisition, the Salem witch trials, and the 30 Years' War, they involve things that are immoral. They involve things that are deeply regrettable. But it must be said that these dark sides have been greatly exaggerated. Mm. Yeah. And so a lot of people come away thinking, wow, mm-hmm. this is a total black eye, when in reality it is it's more complicated, and we have been sold a bill of goods by people who have an agenda to make Christianity look as bad as possible.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to the 30 Years' War, I haven't read much about any of these that I wish I had read, but I remember reading an essay a while back on the 30 Years' War, and it gave rise to, at the end, there was what was called the Peace of Westphalia. I think that's how you pronounce it, but anyway, I remember from that is that agreement gave rise to the modern nation state. So that made me realize, oh, okay, I guess it was about, you know, trampling on other territory and people's rights and all that, because now you have nation states, so people are allowed to be sovereign and they respond, or they are accountable to their own nation and its laws.
Right, right.
So I thought that was helpful.
Yeah, well, I think that I think this question of war is a powerful one. And one of the things I do in a chapter that I'm working on regarding violence in the name of God is I look at just war theory. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail because we have addressed this in other programs, but I just want to mention the idea of just war theory. This would relate to the Crusades. It would relate to other wars. In just war theory, you have fundamentally the idea that warfare is usually evil, but sometimes it's morally necessary, and you should attempt to go to war for just reasons, and you should conduct war in the most just way possible. And so they would argue, for example, just war theory would argue that the decision to go to war may have to be the last result. Going to war should be something that's decided by a legitimate authority. It should involve conducting the war in a just way. And so you would not go after civilians and innocent people. I simply give that very brief overview, Joe, to communicate the idea that Christians have thought a lot about these issues. And by the way, just war theory goes all the way back to St. Augustine. It's addressed by Thomas Aquinas, Francisco Suarez. Christians have thought a lot about the idea that, you know, killing is a momentous event. When you kill, you're killing people who are made in the image of God. But don't we have a moral responsibility sometimes to kill to protect the innocent? And so, you know, Christians have reflected about these issues. The brightest and best people have defended these points of view. Now, I might also say, in responding to this challenge of evil in the name of God, not only do I think there has been an exaggeration of the numbers of people killed in these so-called Christian conflicts, but I also think that there has been an amazing minimization of what I'm going to call atheistic-oriented evil. And I simply want to talk a little bit about that. D'Souza, for example, says in his book, some of the numbers he gives, he estimates that Joseph Stalin was responsible for some 20 million deaths. Mao Zedong, a staggering 70 million, and that Adolf Hitler was responsible for another 10 million. And he mentions there are lots of other people that he's not bringing into the discussion, Soviet leaders like Lenin, Khrushchev, Brezhnev. He doesn't mention Pol Pot, Fidel Castro, Kim Jong-il, etc. But the amazing number that he comes to is this, that in just a few decades in the 20th century, 100 million people may have been executed. Now, I want to look at this very carefully because, quite frankly, I don't want to do to the atheistic naturalist worldview what I think some misguided secular people try to do to the Christian worldview. I want to look at this as carefully as I possibly can, and I want to say this. I'm very glad that most atheists think that killing people in the name of no God is wrong, and I'm very glad that the atheists I know look at people like Stalin and Mao, and they think that that's horrible and terrible. I would simply say this, though, Joe, that, you know, if you look, for example, at communism, you have a philosophy called dialectical materialism. One of their fundamental beliefs is that we live in a purely naturalistic, materialistic universe. There is no God, there is no life after death, and therefore it is a philosophy where atheism is part of public policy. And I do think that the question is then raised when people were killed in the name of no God, let's say in the Chinese Revolution, many people thought, I have the power to use whatever means necessary to reach the goal of communism. And I think while a person could come and say, look, I don't think that murdering millions of people in the name of atheism is right, I think the fundamental issue that we're dealing with there is, well, what are the moral principles that would come to bear? Mm-hmm. Why couldn't somebody like Stalin or Mao Zedong or others simply say, look, we live in a world where there is struggle. I mean, even Hitler, and sometimes people get kind of bent out of shape when you say that Hitler killed in a secular regime, Some people say he was baptized Catholic. Therefore, they want to put the Nazi horrors on the side of Christianity. I don't think that's even remotely accurate. I think Hitler was probably much more influenced by people like Friedrich Nietzsche and Charles Darwin. I think he perverted Darwin, and I think he perverted Nietzsche. I think Hitler would pervert anybody in order to ultimately have his master race, so to speak. But I think the underlying issue that, you know, we're dealing with here, Joe, is this: how in a world without God, how do you ground morality, and how do you give each and every human being rights? I mean, if you violate Christian morality, I can take you to the Sermon on the Mount. I can take you to Christian principles that say people are made in the image of God, that murder is one of the violations of the Ten Commandments. But in a naturalist world, there are questions. And so I would make the criticism, and I don't do it lightly. I think that people killed in the name of no God have a lot harder time trying to justify their position than I do in responding to people who are killed so-called in the name of Christ. Mm.
Would you say that they are borrowing the Christian morality to look at it that way? That is, if this dialectic materialism is true, wouldn't this just be competition over resources, and you just prefer having resources and you prefer that someone else doesn't, and you're just going to do what is expedient to get rid of that competition?
Well, I do think that people can take Darwin's idea of survival of the fittest. I don't think that Darwin would have agreed with Hitler. I don't think Friedrich Nietzsche would have agreed with Hitler. And again, I think these totalitarian dictators will use Christianity, they'll use atheism, they'll use anything that they possibly can to get, you know, their ends. But I definitely think that there is a much harder, it's much harder to talk about objective morality and ground objective morality. Now, there are atheists today who believe in objective morality. In fact, I think that's probably the trend, that there are secular people who want to defend some kind of objective morality. They want to defend the idea that human beings have dignity and they have value. Now, how are they successful at it? Why couldn't somebody like Mao or Stalin come along and say, look, I think killing, getting rid of people who challenge the state, communism is the ultimate goal. We're going to bring about a secular utopia, and so we're going to use any means necessary to do it. Now again, people bring up issues like, you know, Stalin had a religious background. I think there was a time in his life when he was either a seminary student or considered it. Hitler was a baptized Catholic. But I think if you look clearly at the Nazi regime, sure, they would use the church, but they would also persecute the church. I think they had very strong secular points of view. They wanted to create a master race. Lots of religious people were persecuted. So I think we do come back to the issue, Joe, which worldview seems to be able to best ground an objective basis for the dignity and value of human beings? Mm.
Ken, here's kind of an odd question I just thought of as you were speaking. If there were atheists, say, from some of these communist countries at the Nuremberg trials, on what basis would they judge the what the Nazis had done? Or maybe there were some there. I don't know enough about the Nuremberg trials. How would you answer that?
Well, you know, I would encourage people to go back to that white, grainy footage that's still available at the Nuremberg trials. I mean, we're talking about 1946, 1947, when the Nazi leadership those who didn't commit suicide were put on trial. And you have judges from the United States. You have judges from Great Britain. You also have judges from the Soviet Union. Sometimes to win a world view, world war, strange bedfellows have to come together.
Yeah.
Some people might suggest that maybe the Soviets ought to have been put on trial. But you clearly have the issue of that the Nazis had engaged in mass murder. But again, here's the interesting point. As utterly reprehensible and as, I mean, when I think of mass murder, I immediately think of the Holocaust. But when you look at the Chinese and Soviet regimes, the numbers of murdered people is exponentially greater than what Hitler did. So I don't know what what moral ground a secularist might make. I'm sure we would agree that humans have inherent dignity; they have moral worth; that it's wrong to kill. But I think in this big challenge that's made, in my view, I think the greater burden is on the secular movement that have. Killed many, many more people in the name of no God in a much shorter period. And again, a lot of this is not brought forth. Now, I'll say this again. I'm not terribly impressed with the new atheists. I don't think they're as good as formidable as the old atheists. And I think the reason that Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Dan Dennett, and there are others that kind of have come alongside that. I think, Joe, that they're not as formidable because they don't know Christianity very well. They tend to exaggerate Christianity. I think, however, if you go back a few decades, maybe a couple centuries, I think if you look at somebody like a Friedrich Nietzsche, I think if you look at Jean-Paul Sartre, I think if you look at any number of atheists in the early and middle of the 20th century, I think they're more formidable. I think even Bertrand Russell is more formidable. And I think partly, Joe, because I think that atheists in previous centuries, they had to know Christianity. Now, you could say, well, they were forced into it because they lived in kind of a Christian Europe, so to speak. And I guess that, you know, there is some truth in that. But I actually think that they're more formidable because they understand Christianity and they are able to put their finger on challenges. And I freely admit there are areas of Christianity you can challenge. Now, I think I have some good answers, or I think that people like St. Augustine or Thomas Aquinas or any number of other great Christian thinkers living today have good answers for those kinds of things. But I think that the new atheism is largely rhetorical. It kind of throws out these challenges. But yeah, evil's been done in the name of Christ, but it can't even be compared of the evil that's been done in the name of secularism.
Wow.
Now, I think again that we can say that Christianity, you know, Christianity is built on this idea that people are made in the image of God. This is where Judaism and Christianity come together. I mean, Jesus, after all, was the Jewish Messiah. Jesus drew our attention to Yahweh. Judaism and Christianity have this unique relationship. And one of the basic principles of the Hebrew Bible is that people are made in the image of God. And I think that's a powerful idea. I would even go further, Joe. I think that when you go to the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, Paul says in the book of Galatians that there's no difference between Jew, Gentile, male, female, slave, or free, they're all one in Christ. That is such a revolutionary statement because Jewish society was patriarchal. Women had very little rights and opportunities. It was also a time of the Roman Empire in which there were probably many more slaves than there were free people. And of course, there's the conflict between Jew and Gentile. And Paul comes along and says, hey, in the Christian church, there's equality. There's equality among Jew and Gentile. There's equality among male and female. There's equality among slave and free. And the master would even call his slave as a Christian his affectionate brother, sister. This is why, Joe, in the early era of Christianity, the major people groups that joined Christianity were women and slaves. I would go so far as to say something along this line, Joe, that within Christianity, because of the image of God, and because God has become man and laid down his life to redeem human beings, that every person, regardless of their race, their sex, their class, their age, standing, health, appearance, or any other distinction, that they deserve appropriate respect and dignified treatment. And I would even go so far as to say that people have immeasurable worth, and even people with handicaps, limitations, special needs, they're even more to be protected, to be respected. And so, again, this is the idea that, look, if you go around killing people, you're not only, and you have no moral justification for it. I mean, my father was in the Second World War, and everything that I've read about him and I've heard him say, he was involved in quite a bit of combat in the latter part of the Second World War. He did a lot of killing. And I remember not too long before my dad died, he looked me in the eye. And he asked me, Ken, you know the Bible pretty well. Is God going to hold me accountable for killing those German soldiers? And I thought, wow, this is one of the most profound discussions I've ever had in my entire life, and it's with my own dad. And I said, Dad, you had to. Otherwise, the Holocaust would continue. Well, it's not willy-nilly. Killing people is not an easy thing to do. And even when you kill people for the right reasons, you bear a heavy responsibility. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, that was 1985. 40 years had gone by, and my dad's still back there, mm-hmm. you know, in combat, thinking about the men that he killed. Yeah. Well, you can kill in self-defense, and nations can kill to protect people. Police officers do it. Military personnel have done it. But even when you do it for the right reasons, it has weighty moral and spiritual implications. Why? Because people are made in the image of God. And to kill the image of God is an affront to God himself. And, you know, that's where I think, Joe, I might say, and I think you know me well in this context, I have a real respect and I have a real appreciation for people who have to stand, they have to stand and use force. You know, they have to stand on a wall and they say, nobody's going to hurt you tonight, not on my watch. I have respect for that, and I think if we look at the Crusades, I think if we look at the First and Second World War, you know, war can be very evil, but I think it was the morally right thing to do to stop Hitler. Mm-hmm. So these are critical issues. Now, do the atheists have anything like the Imago Dei to ground the dignity and value of human beings? I don't think so. But I very carefully don't want to misrepresent a naturalist atheist worldview. I'm glad that most atheists and Christians agree that killing people either in the name of God or no God is wrongheaded. But I think that these are very difficult issues of how do we ground? If there's no God, no life after death, humans are purely creatures that evolve through purely natural processes, I think you have a hard time defending mm-hmm. how you can have objective morality. Mm. Well, let me also talk a little bit, I think, to another response, and I think another response to the challenge of people killed in the name of God. I think it doesn't take into account the extraordinary good, the extraordinary positive side of Christianity. And I just want to highlight a few things, if I could. I think that Christianity has been an extraordinary source for good in Western civilization, and even outside of Western civilization. I give a quotation here by George Grant. He talks about the Christian worldview and how it impacted Christian missionaries. He says, quote, "As missionaries circled the globe, they established hospitals, they founded orphanages, they started rescue missions, they built almshouses, they opened soup kitchens, they incorporated charitable societies, they changed laws, they demonstrated love, they lived as if people mattered." And one of the things I do in this chapter that I'm working on is I talk about some of the things that Christendom has established: higher education, the European medieval universities. They were founded by Christianity. University of Paris, Oxford, Cambridge, Vienna, Prague, St. Andrews. Ivy League institutions. We talked about the Salem witch trials happening in Massachusetts. Well, you also have a university there, Harvard. Along with Yale, Princeton, Columbia, Brown, these were established by Christian institutions. They have largely become quite secular through the centuries, but this is an extraordinary educational influence that has its origins in Christianity. We can talk about human rights, the abolition of slavery in the Western world. You know, sometimes people say, wow, it looks like the Old Testament involves slavery. The apostles don't come out and condemn it. But in reality, it is these messages that we've been talking about. For example, the image of God, people having dignity, that ultimately led to the abolition of slavery. People like William Wilberforce, the old Quaker denomination, these were people that stood up against slavery in Europe, in England, and in America. The rule of law, the democratic government and judicial system of the Western world has been influenced deeply by the Judeo-Christian religious tradition. Human equality, the equality of each individual person, is strongly influenced by the biblical idea of the image of God. Economic freedom, the value of work and free market capitalism within Western civilization is influenced by Christian ideas. Charitable organizations, Mother Teresa, the Missionaries of Charity, William Booth, the Salvation Army, George Williams, the YMCA. I even noticed recently I was reading some of the principles that are set forth in Alcoholics Anonymous. Influenced by the early Christian thought, mm-hmm. a higher power that alcoholism has taken hold of me, but God can liberate me. Thinking, wow, the Christian thinking has deeply influenced those particular areas. So I think when we ask this question, and don't get me wrong, I really do think that none of this should lead anybody to the conclusion that there aren't serious issues that have been done in the name of Christ that are very problematic. And I don't have a problem with somebody coming along and saying, hey, well, wait a second, what were the Crusades all about? And why would the Catholic Church involve itself in what is called an Inquisition? And what was happening in the Salem witch trials? And what about wars between Catholics and Protestants? I think all of those questions are relevant. You know, one of the basic biblical teachings is, Joe, we have original sin, mm-hmm. that sin has affected our entire life, that we're ultimately incapable of doing things that can be ultimately pleasing to God, and so we have to be saved by grace. And yet, having said all of that, I think that it ignores how Christian history is often exaggerated. It minimizes so much of the evil that has been done in the name of secularism. It fails to appreciate the underlying theological and moral principles like the image of God. And it does not bring out the extraordinary influence, positive influence, that Christianity has had. And thus, as I'm working on this book, I think it's important for me to communicate that, first of all, I think Christianity is rational. I think there are good reasons to believe that God exists. I think there are good reasons to believe that Christianity is true, that Jesus rose from the dead. But I also think that we need to think about this charge. Is Christianity good? I think so. I think that we can make a very strong case that Christianity has been the greatest moral force on planet Earth for good. And then I think we can address a third question that I look at in my book, Joe, and that is Christianity livable? Is it fulfilling? Is it satisfying? And, I think clearly in that context, Christianity shines through very powerfully. So this is kind of part of our ongoing series. For our listeners, Joe and Dave and I have decided that we'd like to address the problem of pain, suffering, and evil, and we'll do it intermittently. So this is one part in that broader issue of looking at bad things that happen in the world.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your insights, Ken. And I'm sure a lot of people, as I am, will be looking forward to getting this in written form as you continue to work on your book. You probably have written on some of this or can refer us. I know you mentioned some sources here. Do you want to mention any at this time?
Yeah, I sure do. A number of these points I have addressed in my book, Without a Doubt, Seven Truths That Changed the World. I talk about the Christian worldview in A World of Difference. So a lot of these issues I have addressed. Hopefully in this new book, we'll kind of focus them a little bit more.
All right, great. We'd like to hear from you. Let us know your comments and questions. You can reach Ken on Twitter at RTB_KSamples. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, and Spotify. For Ken Samples, this is Joe Aguirre with a reminder that the goal of apologetics is not victory, but truth. Thanks for listening, and join us for the next edition of Straight Thinking.
Thank you for listening. Your prayers and financial support are reaching people with reasons for faith in Jesus Christ, our Creator and Savior. To allow Reasons to Believe programs like this to continue, make your gift today at reasons.org.